Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sam Legasic.
And I'm Dreadful Dan Gallagher. And we're two old buddies that have lived our life at the edge of the mainstream.
So come join us where things are a little odd.
This is the
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder.
Hello, everyone. And can you imagine a world where you're simply doing your washing up? And suddenly you're pulled down the plug hole by some kind of strange, largely formless organism. Your subcutaneous fat is dissolved along with your vital organs and your bones, and you're assimilated into a large, what can only be described as, blob. Then maybe you're imagining a scene from the 1988 American horror film, The Blob. And if you'd like to know more about that film, then well, oddballs, listen in.
If it had a mind, you could reason with it. If it had a body, you could shoot it. If it had a heart, you could kill it. Now, man is no longer the supreme being on this planet.
The organism is growing at a geometric rate. By all accounts, it's at least 1,000 times its original mass.
Nobody believes me about what happened tonight.
What did happen?
You were there, you saw.
Plasmic life form that hunts its prey. Predator.
I want that organism alive.
I think you ticked it off.
The blob. Terror has no shape.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Oddcast. With me, Dreadful Dan G, and Sam, as always. Hello, hello. Sam, how are you doing?
Hello, hello, I'm good. Blobby, it's Mr. Blobby. Another British reference. God, I tell you what, with the amount of American and Indian followers we have, they must love these British cultural references that we constantly come out with.
I think it's good that we get this out of the way, because the whole time I was watching this film, I just kept imagining Mr. Blobby popping up from around a corner.
Blobby, Blobby, Blobby!
Mr. Blobby was an incredibly popular character and cultural phenomenon, actually, for a while in the sort of early to mid-90s in the UK. He had a Christmas number one and everything. He was, like, unavoidable.
Well, our mutual friend, Rich Keeble, has done a scene, did a sketch with Mr. Blobby. Can you believe it?
It's a dream come true.
Yeah. The Mr. Blobby. But we're not talking about that.
No, we're doing The Blob, which is a 1988 American science fiction horror film. It was co-written and directed by Chuck Russell, who also wrote and directed A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, the best of the Nightmare on Elm Street films, I think. So that was the year prior in 1987. He then went on to direct The Mask, Jim Carrey, The Scorpion King, amongst others.
Scorpion King was shit, but yeah.
The Blob is obviously a remake of the 1958 film of the same name, a real kind of like drive-in sci-fi Americana classic, and it follows a similar main plot involving an acidic amoeba-like organism that crashes down to Earth in a military satellite, which devours and dissolves anything in its path as it grows. Sam, did you like the film?
Did I like it? Bloody loved it.
Yeah. Had you seen it before? Or was this like your first time?
No. So I'd seen the original Blob, but like 15 years ago or something. So not really, don't remember that much about it. But certain bits stick out in the mind, especially like the cinema scene and all this stuff and whatever. But no, I hadn't seen this version at all. So when you said I were watching this and I started watching it, I was like, okay, oh God, here we go. It's going to be absolute shit. And then I saw Frank Darabont's name come up, who I think wrote with the Chuck guy on Nightmare on Elm Street 3 as well. I think that's how they met. And I was like, oh, Frank Darabont, I like his stuff. Cool, okay. And then as I was watching it, I was like, oh, man, this is just so great. This is like the perfect kind of B movie. And I don't mean that in a sense of like, oh, it's so shit, it's good. Like, as in it's an actual, like, for me, it's this in the same ballpark as like The Thing or whatever, where it's on the surface, it might look a bit, how to put it, like stupid almost, but it's actually got great characters, great story, shocking effects. You know, there are like story arc, there are narrative arcs, there are character arcs. It kept moving. Pace was great. And I was watching it going, this is brilliant. This is so good. And it's nice, like, it's, and also like the main thing I enjoy about watching these films these days is they're like 90 minutes. So you're in and you're out properly. And it feels very satisfying. I came away from that being like, that was great. Really loved it.
Great. Oh, I mean, I loved it as well, for all the same reasons that you've just listed off, really. Mm. And I kind of thought, why has it taken me until 2021 to see this film? It feels like it should be a huge cult classic.
I don't understand why that is. Because I honestly, like, I know there have been Blob films.
There have been Blob films. Is this one of your weird sexual fetishes?
blobfilms.org. No, it's in like, there've been like Blob sequels or whatever and things like that, and knockoffs or whatever. I haven't even heard of it, but if I had done, I would have just thrown it into like the classic. They're just fucking, they've got something from the 50s and they're sucking it dry kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's what I've done for many years because I was aware of this film. And it's only, I'll be honest, the reason why I thought I'll watch it is because I came at the soundtrack.
Okay.
I can't remember what led me to the soundtrack. I think because I've been poking around some horror things and John Carpenter. I think it was after we did John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll come to the soundtrack later on. But I just think this is great. And I think originally it didn't do very well. So... Right. Straight off the bat, it was a bit of a flop. Critical reception seemed to be okay, but the commercial response was not good. Wikipedia suggests it had a budget of $10 million and only made 8.2 at the box office.
Fuck.
Not sure how accurate that is, because I've read somewhere else it had 19 million and that they spent 10 of that on the special effects. But,
right,
you know, basically whatever metric you look at it, the understanding is it flopped. Right. And it doesn't seem to have ever really rehabbed or recovered despite efforts over the last however long it is, what, 30 years?
Yeah.
30 years. We're actually further away from this film now than this film was from the original Blob.
That's true. That's a good point. I don't know why it's not been remade since properly anyway, apart from the fact that it's got a great title, which is also a shit title. Like, no one now would go to see The Blob.
Yeah. I think that's part of the problem. A lot of people can't get over that premise because it's a very silly premise. But like you say, it's executed to a really high standard.
Mm.
You know, they're fully on board and they're not mucking about. Like you say, it's actually a very, quite violent film in a way. Mm. You know, there's no, about to be attacked by a big blob. It's like, no, this is serious. Something horrible is going to happen to you if this blob gets hold of you.
I mean, and that's the things that, like, when I compare it to the original, which I haven't seen in a while, but I just remember, I don't know what they used, probably like, not, it wasn't jelly, but like, I don't know, like, oh, it was jam, I think, which is kind of, there's a little joke, I believe, Kevin Dillon, who's in it, by the way, knocks over a thing. He's like, oh, look, it's just jam. I killed the jam or whatever. Which I think it's a little nod to the fact that they must have used that in the original. I don't know. But when you see that kind of blob thing, you're just like, it's just this fucking like liquid, just like pouring out. Whereas with this, they've made it really like a muscle. I think I read somewhere that it's supposed to be like an inside out stomach. Hence, it's like burning everything through acid or whatever.
Right, yeah. It does look like that. It looks absolutely revolting.
Yeah, it's really horrible, but it's all like tenuine-y, or whatever word it is. And
Sinewy,
yeah, that's right. And it's like, it just is like this fucking bit, like all these different parts of meat. And at one point, like towards the end, it looks like it, like another part just like comes out of it randomly. Like rather than like it absorbing, it's like it's like giving birth to like parts of itself or something. It's just, and there's just something very biological, something very physical about it, even with all the fucking, it was not CG, but with all the effects that they've done with it, it just looks very real and a lot more human, basically, in a weird way, rather than just some like sloppy jam. And that's what I kind of think of when I think of The Blob, or have done before this point, which is just like, it's just like a liquid that just basically swallows you up. Like, boring. Like, it's the most basic, lazy, almost kind of enemy ever. I don't know. It's just something that's just like grows and it's just like, it's like whatever. Whereas this feels like a proper living thing that's got some agency or whatever.
You mentioned it's been nigh on 15 years or so since you saw that first film, but do you remember having a good impression of that?
Yeah, I remember thinking it was better than what I thought it would be, because it's Steve McQueen, right?
Yeah.
And I remember thinking he was good in it and took it very seriously. It seemed like, for what was a bit cheesy in retrospect. And I just liked those kind of, you know, retro sci-fi films anyway. And this one I quite enjoyed. It just felt a bit more like, it's like, here's a person in a mask or whatever, or like an alien, like, you know, the man who fell to earth, that's David Bowie, The Day the Earth Stood Still, where it's like, I'm an alien and here's my buddy who stands by my ship or whatever. It's like, with this, it's like this gloopy fucking horrible thing that is just fucking weird. I think there's a weirdness to it.
Instead of being something humanoid, and then it always looks a bit hokey.
Yes, exactly. And I think I enjoyed that aspect of it, because it's almost like, it's so weird and silly, it makes no sense. And that's almost weirdly even scarier.
Yeah. More alien.
Yeah.
I really love the original myself. And of course, you know, when you read up on this, the debate that people get into is the remake better? No, it's not as good as the original. Blah, blah, blah. They're both really good films. I think they both have different tones. They're both obviously different eras. This one being the 80s, you know, compared to the 50s, I think there's a little bit more of a cynical tone. There's a mistrust of authority.
Yeah.
Obviously coming through. We'll talk about that when we get to the characters. But I just think, yeah, very different films, and why get bogged down in comparing them? But one of the things I always take away from that first film is, and I always think about it to this day, they freeze the blob. That's how they kill it.
Yeah.
They freeze it and then they dump it in Antarctica. So it will never thaw out.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. It will never thaw. Because if it thaws, it will go back on the killing spree.
That was how the thing came about.
Let's yeah, exactly. That's it. You're like, but hang on, what if an Arctic mission goes out there? But I also think every year I see more and more about the ice caps melting. I don't think, oh my God, you know, environmental disaster. Literally the first thing that pops into my head is, what about the fucking blob? It's still out there frozen.
Getting warmer by the day.
Yeah.
By the second. Yeah, I think the remake is more up my street. I like the fact it's in the middle of being a bit hokey and yet not taking itself seriously, but yet taking its characters and the horror aspect of it very seriously. Man, there's just so many bits of it that I liked.
So one of the things I really like about the original is the setting of that American town. And I think what they've done here is really good in sort of retaining that. It does feel like kind of quite cute in a way, like small town vibe. And it really reminded me, I don't know what you think of this, of Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
You've got like the nice coffee shop. You've got some really like stereotypical American kind of characters. You know, there's the bad boy, there's the prom queen, there's the sheriff. But they all seem a little bit kind of like skewed and quirky and like slightly offbeat. And that kind of carries on throughout the film. And that's part of what makes it kind of fun, I think.
Yes, that's Frank Darabont kind of all over it, which is cool. Yeah, it is very kind of, well, it's even got one of the same actors. What's his name from Eraserhead?
Yeah. Oh, damn it. I've forgotten his name.
Yeah, it's really annoying.
Jack Nance.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But he, I just liked just the way, so bear in mind, I was going into this like fresh pretty much, and you've got it starts off with those quiet shots of this little town and it's like dead. There's like no one on the streets at all. And at first I'm thinking, is this like the aftermath of the blob or whatever? And we're going to get some kind of weird flashback or something. And then you've got like the angels around and it's like, you know, you're looking up at the angels and it's now, you know, are they like protectors of this, of what's going to happen, or, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. And it's quite long as well. There's quite a lot of these shots and I thought,
yeah,
they're quite cool. And then later on, they actually do speak about like, oh, the town is a snow town and business has dried up or whatever. And I did think about that intro sequence of like, okay. And then it goes to like a graveyard, which is, you know, and you're thinking, okay, death and all this, like they're kind of foreshadowing what's going to happen. And then it pans, has this really cool shot, it just pans across and you realise it's because everyone's at the fucking football game.
Yeah.
The town is empty because it's such a small town, everyone just goes to this one thing.
It's great. It's a great example of how they play around with some expectations of their audience.
Which is constant, and it happens throughout the film, which I suppose we'll go into later, but like that whole small town, as you said, Twin Peaks-esque. Like, you've got characters, and that's kind of the main thing. Bordering on caricatures, as you said. Kevin Dillon as this, like, you know, the rebel. And you've got this cool sequence where he's about to do this motorcycle jump over this bridge, which he does later, which kind of is part of his arc, right? He has the confidence or whatever to go over this bit. But on this bit, he's, like, drinking a beer, and then you're cutting to the football game with the cheerleaders and then he's cutting in between it as he's kind of revving up to go over the bridge. And it's, I was like, that's quite cool. Cause already it's like, you've kind of see him that it's almost as if he's picturing it for himself. Like he's a rebel, but he just kind of wants to be part of the gang. Yeah. He wants to be like, you know, have that same jock kind of, you know, respect, I guess, from other people, which he just hasn't got. And even though like there's no one watching him apart from that old man, and yet the jocks have all got all these like, you know, stadium full of people and cheerleaders, whatever. Watching them, there's kind of just having, you know, I wasn't sure if it was trying to like, if it's him trying to almost, you know, wish that was happening, or whether it's just literally just showing the difference between these two lifestyles of these people within the town, or whatever, then how rebellious he is by having it happen at the same time. I don't know. But yeah,
it's an interesting like intro for that character, because he is shown to be like the bad boy outsider, but at the same time, he is embarrassed.
Yeah.
Falls flat on his ass and just has that tramp, like giving him a slow clap.
Yeah. 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 And that's kind of like the way he's all kind of like fine about it as well. He's not a dick, basically, which is the main thing. Like whenever he acts like a dick throughout this whole thing, it's usually he's got this thing of where it's like, it's, you feel like it's, and it's cool Kevin Dillon could do this, he's done it before, but you feel like it's not him, basically, like that's not the real him, that he's actually like a nicer guy than that, which is why as the events unfold, it's not, it's him coming to like terms with like him being himself, basically, rather than living up to the caricature of this bad boy. He's actually not like that at all. He's like he's a good, decent guy that's just been given like a rough life or whatever.
I felt the same. I felt like he did a great job of bringing that character to life and making him really relatable. And just I warmed up to him quite quickly from starting off going, oh my God, this guy's such a dick.
Yeah.
And that was helped in no small part by his terrible haircut.
Extensions, I think they were as well. Yeah, but that's
meant to be like an 80s bad boy haircut, and it looks like something from the 70s.
Shopping mall mum.
I think it looks like a member of like Emerson, Lake and Palmer or something. Right. It's just really bad. It's like all fluffy and it's terrible. Apparently, a bit of trivia here, Sam. Apparently, that role was offered to Chad McQueen, who's Steve McQueen's son.
Yeah. Who I know has been in
The Blob 2.
Has he?
No, I don't know.
Okay. I was going to say, I didn't know he existed. So,
no, likewise. But apparently he turned it down on principle because he doesn't want to do projects that are too much like his father. So admirable, but at the same time, career seems to have stalled.
No, fuck him. He's got enough money anyway. Kevin Dillon was a better bet. He does that kind of thing quite well. He's quite a Twin Peaks looking kind of guy. He looks like James
from
Thingy. Oh, I thought he looked like Bobby more than James.
He's got that James vibe though, like going off on the motorcycle, looking all moody.
Yeah, but he's like, James was like, I forget, it's Twin Peaks here, but like James was like quiet. Like he was the quiet, like sensitive thing.
Yeah.
Whereas Bobby was more like loud and like trying to be like the bad boy, but actually was kind of in love and all right at the heart of it, I think, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
That's my cut, and also the hair.
So that's Brian Flagg. Mm. Like you say, kind of starts off as that bad boy. But when we kick off the movie, we're kind of introduced to this couple, burgeoning couple. You've got Paul and Meg.
Mm.
So Paul's more like your kind of straight-laced football playing kind of, not a jock, not an arsehole. Just like a nice
heartthrob.
Yeah. And Meg's like the homecoming queen type character.
Yeah, the cheerleader, head cheerleader, whatever. Like American girl next door, whatever.
Yeah, so it's nice that all three of these are sort of set up initially as quite stock characters, but then you kind of get to know them. But I really like the thing, Paul and Meg are about to go on their first date.
Mm.
And you get a really good scene, I think, in The Chemist.
Mm.
Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think Paul's like nervous about buying condoms. So he sends his friend in to do it. And his friend's, I can't remember what he's like. He gets embarrassed because the reverend comes in as well.
Yeah.
Sees him buying them.
Yeah. He's like, oh, they're not for me.
Yeah. They're for that guy. He's taking some girl out and...
Yeah, he's an animal or something. He's going, come on, I don't want to leave this girl waiting. And he's just talking about generally, not like from a sexual perspective. And they've just got this great shot where it's like he's saying that and the foreground's blurred and then it pulls focus and it's the other guy and he just turns around to camera as if to look at the pharmacist. He's like, gives this look like, see? Yeah. It's like, oh, that's fucking great. That's so good.
But then when Paul goes to pick up Meg, and she's like, come in and meet my father. It's The Chemist.
Yeah.
It's a great funny little moment, that.
As soon as that paper was up, I was like, oh, brilliant. Here we go. It just goes, ribbed. yeah, that guy's been in a ton of stuff. I was trying to, I should have looked it up, but like I recognize him from, I feel like he's one of those faces that's been in like every film.
Like, I recognise him.
And there's a few of those, actually. There's a few faces which are really super recognisable. There's one guy who I was like, where the fuck is that face from? And I realised he's a Tim and Eric guy. There's a Tim and Eric, you remember, the guys listening won't be able to see it, but there's a Tim and Eric thing. I think he's like reading like a news thing, but he's been in a few things and he's like really hunched and he looks really fucking old. And he's like, ugh, and he's all like scumped to one side, like he's got what they call it when your spine's all fucked up.
Okay.
And I remember like when I see those Tim and Eric things, I'm like, oh God, that's a really, you know, I know they like to use these people and whatever. And you know, there's a whole thing about that. But yeah. And then when this guy, there's one of the doctor guys in the white hazmat suits that comes up later. I'm like, that's him. Like that's who that guy is. It's a really weird thing. But yeah, there's a few people, you know, I'm like, I recognize these guys. What I didn't realize is Frank Darabont tends to use the same people. So the sheriff is a guy who goes on to star in The Mist. He then goes on to be in The Walking Dead, which Frank Darabont did to begin with. And then there's a whole legal battle with The Walking Dead of Frank Darabont and all this stuff. But yeah, it's all comes together. It's all part of it. Yeah, sorry.
It's cool seeing that. Yeah, it's cool seeing those faces like popping up.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
It does feel like a, like you said, like there's an ensemble feel, I think. Mm. Helped in no small part by the fact that we quite quickly start sort of like cycling through these characters as they get killed off.
Mm.
So Paul, who's been introduced to kind of set up to be probably like the hero, the main protagonist.
Yeah, likeable as well. Because at first I was like, oh, here we go. We're going to side with the rebel. The rebel's going to come through and, like, you know, either hinder the whole thing and be a dick, or he's going to, like, at the last moment, like, save everyone or something.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, when you get the jock guy and he starts getting involved with stuff, then you're like, oh, Mr. Nice, Mr. Do-Gooder. Yeah, he's going to see a suit. But I wondered if it's going to be a case of, like, oh, is he actually, like, and he's going to be out for himself or something like that. He's going to give up his date and run off.
Yeah.
But no, like he acts like a decent guy throughout the whole thing until
we never find out if he was going to fulfill that character arc, Sam, because he falls foul of the blob in possibly the most hideous scene of the film.
Yeah.
And it's great to get this shock in, I think, straight off the bat, because I was like, holy moly, this film is actually going to be brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because up to that point, the blob's been like small. It's been like just a bit bigger than a fist or whatever. And it basically ate a homeless person. And that's when the next victim, is it Paul?
Yeah.
And it kind of just, you see it like above him in this pretty cool shot and it just kind of falls on him, which is like, oh, whatever. But you haven't really seen anything. There's no like body horror stuff. Yeah, or anything. It's all been a bit like, oh, it's bits and pieces, but not really. It's just a homeless guy. And then, yeah, it just cuts to this fucking scene where he, And I'm guessing how they did it is this was actually him in some wherever, but he is stretching out, and you'll see it, because I think it's the most famous shot of the film if you like Google it.
Yeah.
His face, he's got his nose like pushed up. It's basically like when people get like, was it cling film or whatever, and suffocate someone. It's like that, but it's all like in his mouth, and it's just pulling him right back. And he's got his hand out, and it's all like this pink slimy stuff. And then she's like, ugh. And then the next bit, his like end of Indiana Jones style, his whole face starts to like fucking melt away as it's pulled back. Ugh. And I was just like, fuck. Like, this is right up my street. Cause I thought, oh, it's just going to be like, they just like dissolve like fucking the witch in like Wizard of Oz or something in the water. Yeah. I'm melting. But with this, it was like, this is fucking horrific. And it's relentless as well. Like every time there's a blob death, it's always fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
But this is a big first one. And it really set me up to like pay attention, because I was like, for one thing, the hero's dead. Like you've just killed off the main hero. Like we've been stuck with this guy since the very beginning. He was the first character we saw. Like he made some like cracky jokes about like, will you go to the prom with me or whatever? And all this stuff at the beginning. Nice guy. We've had this little bit of to and fro, these nice little like high school comedy moments or whatever.
Yeah.
And as soon as the action started to go in, he's fucking killed off. He's fucking dead. In a really, really horrible way. But yeah, I thought it looked fucking great. It might be the best bit in the movie, just for that reason.
Yeah.
The fact that it's a shock that he's dead. And also just the way it's done, it's immediately pulling the rug from under you, going like, You want a horror film? Here you fucking go.
Yeah. So at that point, you know, then we're kind of like, okay, we've got Meg and basically Brian, the bad guy.
Mm.
And they start to form a sort of uneasy alliance. And at that point, like the sheriff is introduced as more of a main character. And I thought at this point, okay, he's actually the main protagonist. And he's gonna sort this out. He's like a good old timey kind of, he's a good guy, gonna get stuff done, take no nonsense.
Well, I wondered if it was the kids were gonna do the kids stuff and the adults were gonna do the adult stuff, and it kind of meets up at the end, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Nope.
10 minutes later, I think his sort of girlfriend.
Yeah. Hold on. Because, yeah, you've got the setup is that, and this is what you were saying before, he's gone into the diner right at the beginning of the movie. There's this like really sweet moment with the waitress where he's basically asking her out in a very sweet way. And the dialogue here is really good. It's Frank Darabont's like cool writing or whatever. She leaves a little, and you're like, oh, okay, is he going to go out with her? Is he actually asking her out? Is she going to understand? And then she's like, I can't. And he's like, okay, cool, I get it. And then she writes a little note, like a knockoff at 11 or whatever. He's like, okay, he's in. And then he kind of hassles the bad kid, but not properly. And there's some other bits and pieces. And then basically the next time you see him is, felt like I needed to set that up, because it was a real fucking, you're expecting it's like, oh no, because there's the waitress and you know, and now it's attacked the fucking cafe. And she's there, and you know, he's going to have to save her, because you know he's coming, because he's going to meet her to go on this date. You know, he's on his way there, so he's going to save the day, right?
And she's on the phone. She's in the phone booth, and that thing's like surrounding the glass.
Yeah.
And you're like, but she's on the phone. She's going to get through. And they just go, no, he's left. He's on the way to the diner.
Yeah.
And just a second after that, you just see his grey, ashen, bloated face.
Yeah, like half drift past melted off
glass.
But the best bit is you see his eyes moving.
Oh.
So he's still alive. He's still fucking alive.
That's horrible.
And you just think, fuck, like the fucking sheriff's dead. Like people just fucking dying. And then she dies straight afterwards in a really fucking cool shot. I don't know how they did this. I think it must have been like a dummy they put in there as her. Maybe they did some miniature and just blew it up or something, but you can kind of see it surrounding it, leading up to it, as we said, and then it just kind of explodes in and just like, right, just kind of surrounds it, and it's a really cool shot. That really stuck with me, actually. And yeah, like people are just dying. So like at this point, you're just like, well, no one's safe. Like, and now like throughout the whole film, I'm thinking, well, they'll just kill off anyone at any point. So, and they do, to be honest. Yeah, really good, really great. And I'd argue that, is it Pam, the girl?
Meg, sorry.
That she is the, that it's her, she's the main, almost the main character of the film.
Because I think at this point, the focus then goes on to Meg and bad boy Brian, and she starts to emerge as the hero, as the protagonist, as the action hero, right?
Yeah, because they kind of go off and they kind of split up. I can't remember exactly what happens, how that happens, but and they're kind of doing their own thing. So he's like noticing, because they come together and it's like these fucking guys in suits turn up and they're like, oh, cool. And they kind of give a bit of background, like, yeah, we're here to like investigate stuff. And she's like, oh, okay, they're the authorities and we're okay. And Kevin Dillon's like, they haven't even got a fucking logo. You don't know who these fucking guys are. And that's a good, that's the thing of like her, like he's not just like a rebel. And he's like, he goes like, oh, I just don't like authority or whatever. But he's making her question, like almost be, almost grow up, like that coming of age thing, which is a great arc that she has, where she becomes just like, oh, I don't know, kind of like cheerleader, like numbnuts. Almost, but you've already seen that there's like hidden depth to her. She's like really nice with the old man and all this stuff, and the homeless person they pick up and everything. And you're kind of on her side as she sees the guy die, her boyfriend, and all this turning into like a woman. Where like at the end, she's fucking got a machine gun, and all this stuff. And I'm just like, yeah, that was cool. That was a really good like character arc of how she's very quickly just gone with the flow. She hasn't like scuppered or anything. She's kind of just gone full hog into it, the same as Kevin Dillon does. But he kind of goes from like what would be like a selfish outsider to saving the town. And that's kind of his journey, almost like becoming one with the town again, and just kind of not having to feel like he has to be like a rebel or whatever, just to accept himself, I guess. I don't know.
And it's really satisfying because I genuinely really warmed to these characters. Like we said, Kem Dillon did a great job. I think Shawnee Smith as Meg was really, really good as well.
Right. I don't know what she's been in.
I know. Do you know what I've seen her in? An episode of The X-Files.
Oh, really? Which one?
Always bring the conversation back around to The X-Files. Well,
I've just been watching it, like literally today. So
it's an episode called Firewalker, which is actually quite an unmemorable one, I think. But she's good in that as well. She plays a very different type of character.
Firewalker, which one's that?
It's about a research team that are looking into some strange things in a volcano.
Oh, yeah.
And got, I think he goes mad.
Yeah, it's got the guy from West Wing and all that and Get Out. He's the main kind of antagonist that actually isn't the antagonist. He's the genius. Like a, you know, they're like, oh, he's a genius. That's the West Wing guy who's been in tons of stuff.
She plays like a young researcher who's come along for the ride.
Right.
And it turns out that actually they're having a relationship. So she's very naive and vulnerable.
Yeah.
And yeah, I know you're talking really good about now.
I don't remember specifically her face. I know the character.
She looks really different. But But I think that Meg, that character arc, it seems quite a common one of films of this time. But I'm thinking, I think...
Is Aliens.
Two years later, remake of Night of the Living Dead, where they flip it and Barbara is the one who kind of like toughens up and like literally tools up with guns and stuff.
That's right, becomes
a Sigourney Weaver-esque ass kicker.
Because that's what surprised me about the original Night of the Living Dead. Because I saw it after the remake.
Oh, really?
I think. And I was like, oh, she's like soggy tissue. Like, she's not doing anything. Her character was, in the remake, she was...
I think wet blanket might be the common expression.
Oh, is it?
I think soggy tissue is something that you've...
I've been picked using up from it your all own, the time.
your own habits.
Yeah. It's true. Sadly true. Looking at Shawnee Smith, which isn't, who's not someone in the blob. It's just a guy called Sean. Yeah. No, I say like wet tissue or something, just like the fact that it just breaks apart very easily. Maybe wet blanket is the expression. But I've turned it into tissues. I've made it even more disgusting. Sorry, but yes. Yeah, she's a cool character.
I think it's just interesting. There's a lot of these like tough kind of female characters in films of this time. And also, just think, I should have mentioned this earlier, you know, there was this basically pattern, I think, of remaking these old 50s and 60s sci-fi films. So,
hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I think like 1978, you had the remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers that seemed to have kicked it off. Obviously, John Carpenter's Thing.
Yeah.
The Fly.
Yeah.
So then you get The Blob, and like we said, 1990, you've got Night of the Living Dead. Mm. So I guess, you know, the reason they were making these is they were probably box office successes. So this must have been a real disappointment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. I don't mind it when, you know, they kind of take, I suppose it's for us how like people started doing stuff more. We're like, the CG is really good. So, yeah, you know, we can do like Avengers. We could do comic book heroes better now than we could have done in the 80s or whatever. It's that kind of thing. Take something and punch it up a bit where you can. But at least with this one and with The Thing, well, and The Fly, to be honest, is that at least like the stories are still great and they still work and they're engaging and they're not just like, it's like we've got better effects, but we're not necessarily reliant on them. And to be honest, The Blob is like a bit hit and miss. Like there were some, the physical stuff was really good. There was some of the green screen bits, which I was just like, oh, that's awful. I remember this one bit, which always made me laugh, always, like I only saw it once, but like, which made me laugh, which was the, where it slaps down on like someone and then it lifts back up, like Roger Rabbit style, with like the person like flattened and just stuck on it, like a bit of paper, like they've just got 2D. That was really weird. There was one bit as well, which I thought was quite funny, which is like, there's that guy with, there's a load of little weird, funny bits. Like with the black doctor guy when he falls down the manhole or whatever, and then they just like, all his like colleagues just like shoot him or something as he's like down there, I can't remember. And then there's one guy who has his grenades and he pulls all his grenades off and the blob just goes on top of him. And you're like, okay, here we go. It's going to like explode it or whatever. And then Kevin Dillon's running along. And in the background, you just see these little like fires like underneath the blob and you're just like, oh, fucking hell, there's like no stopping this thing. Well, by that point, they've already established that it's cold, it's kind of scared.
Yeah.
Cold. Yeah.
But yeah, the effects are amazing. Like you say, some of that blue screen stuff lets it down.
Mm.
But generally, they're pretty incredible.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, at the end of it, I found myself wondering, can Hollywood studios actually even pull off this kind of thing these days? is that a lost art? Because if you did that in CGI, it would not look as good.
No.
I mean, it's so tangible.
Mm.
And like you say, it looks like at times it looks like an inside-out stomach.
Mm.
It looks so organic, basically.
It looked like the thing. Like, it looked like the. I think it's a different person who did it, but it's very much of that ilk of, like...
Yeah.
Of an art, of someone that's... It's not a computer guy, but it's like someone who's physically sat there and spent a lot of time making this work and experimenting and doing it again and doing it again and making sure that, you know, it's ready for the take and all this stuff. And it, yeah, it's just great. And some of the stuff, like, there's loads of little bits which I think, you know, you would probably forget unless someone showed you. But, like, you know, pulling, well, in that bit where she's, like, trying to pull his arm and his arm just, like, comes off. Or, like, there's one bit where she picks up a woman in the cinema or something. It just takes off the floor. An entire, like, half of her is just melted.
Yeah.
And there's things like that where it's just like, fucking hell, like, it's physically horrific. And just, it doesn't pull any punches with it trying to, it's there to, like, shock and make you feel disgusted and be like, fuck, this is, like, melting flesh that's kind of going on here.
Yeah. Don't watch this while you're eating Angel Delight.
Yeah.
There's one other character that interested me that I wanted to see what you thought about.
The priest?
Yeah, Reverend Meeker.
He's great. He's such a weird-looking guy. I swear when he came on screen, I was like, oh, I must have seen him in something else. He must have been... He's got such a great face. There's no way he could have just been used in Justice Film or whatever. Yeah, he was quite interesting because he plays like the kind of... the classic, like, alcoholic priest who's, you know... all like do-goody, but not really. And he's just like so creepy looking. It really adds to it. And yeah, that kind of, so at the end, basically, so what happens is they're able to freeze the blob and it shatters into a million bits and they kind of scoop it all up. And it's like this kind of Christmas style thing where it's like there's all snow falling, which is actually whatever it is, liquid nitrogen or something
falling
from the sky, which would surely burn you. Through being so cold. And it's like a little like festive, weird horror, like, oh, Christmas miracle or something like that, which is great. And it also feeds into the thing that they were talking about and they mentioned it in the actual film, which is like they needed snow to come this year to like save the town or whatever.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And the snow has come, even though it's artificial. And all that stuff. And then it cuts to basically the priest guy in the middle of nowhere, like as the leader of some kind of like religion or cult or whatever, or maybe it's like just normal Jesus stuff, but he's talking about the end of days, I believe, or whatever.
Yeah.
And what you realize is that earlier on in the film, he had been picking up like little shards of it that had frozen over in an earlier scene. And from the ice cabinet, which is where we saw that it was afraid of the cold in the first place. And he's kept it in a jar and now it's like it's a thing. It's another new blob in a jar that's quite, you know, sets up. Well, not sets up a sequel. It's more just like leave it on a cliffhanger kind of thing. Even though the story's resolved. And I was like, man, it's really weird because they've made him look even creepier, even sleazier. He's got his like disgusting, like long hair. He's got his eyes all fucked up. He's got half a face or whatever.
Yeah, because he gets burnt quite badly at some point.
Mm.
And so now he's like, disgusting.
Like, yeah, they didn't need to do that. But for some reason, I was just like, it's nice because it kind of fills in the world a little bit more. And that character as well. Not necessarily like, oh, they're trying to set up a sequel. I don't think they necessarily were, and they didn't. More just like, I felt it was to do more with that character that you feel like he was fucking weird to begin with, and he's ended up weird, and it's an actual threat that he's like some fucking weirdo that's out there with this thing.
That's it. Yeah. It just feels like a little, like an Easter egg in the film, basically.
Because
he gets introduced in that scene that we discussed in The Chemist. And you kind of think, oh, that's his purpose fulfilled. He was just there to be the priest that makes him feel a bit awkward for benefit
seconds
of that joke.
Yeah.
But then he pops up again and starts, like you say, seems a bit weird.
Mm.
And you're not quite sure where he's going. And then every time he pops up subsequently, he just seems more evangelical and a bit mad.
Yeah.
And then, it's just a nice little sort of like epilogue at the end of the film.
Mm.
That idea that, yeah, maybe he's going to facilitate the end of the world.
Yeah.
With his little shard of blob.
Yeah, his little tiny blob guy.
They have the tentacle.
Yeah, yeah, literally. Yeah, I guess as well, it's like part of, I liked the whole, the fact that the, it felt like the film was like kept changing in a sense of like, it started off with a bit of a comedy. Well, it started off those initial bits, like as, okay, so it's going to be some like horror, apocalyptic horror or something. And then turns into like high school comedy. And then a little bit of like a cheesy monster horror, then like kind of body horror.
Yeah.
And then goes off on this kind of like thriller, like chase slasher almost style where they're trying to run away from it. And even the little kid, I forgot about that. The little kid in the sewer, you're like, she goes back to save and like thinking, and I remember like when she was going back thinking, well, usually they're pretty dead by this point, but you know, I understand she's going to try. And then he comes out the fucking water with his hand out and he's just fucked. He's just fucking like half melted.
It's horrible.
And she's like, fuck this. Like, I'm out of here. Yeah. That's just,
yeah, that was a real, if you hadn't quite cottoned on to the direction of the film by that point, that was really like, we are going for the jugular with this movie.
Yeah.
No one's safe.
Exactly. And then it's got the whole like conspiracy government thing, and then it turns into like an action film. And the whole thing is just some kind of weird sci-fi. So it's like, it feels, there's like a lot of variety in what
you would
kind of classify as like a monster flick or something.
Yeah. That's a nice summation actually of all the like, yeah, fun subgenres all jostling around in this blobby grab bag.
Yeah.
Really, you touched there on that government conspiracy subplot. Mm. Actually, before we come to that, just we've touched on it really, but yeah, basically, like you say, after the sheriff's been killed and everyone's been running around town, the blob's been killing people, getting bigger. They happen upon, but Meg and Brian happen upon these guys in hazmat suits up in the mountains in the hills.
Yeah.
I've seen from chit-chat online, quite a lot of people actually disliked this tacking on of a subplot about the government conspiracy.
Oh, really?
Obviously, this wasn't part of the original. In the original, it just crashes down from outer space. But, yeah, it was revealed that the blob is actually a result of government tests.
Mm.
I suppose it's like Cold War-esque weaponry.
Yeah. Well, they say that in it, don't they?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And so this is just a made me think of like Return of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
You seen that one?
Yeah, yeah, love that one.
Where basically it's like, yeah, this is a test on a town. And actually, you know, we want to contain the threat, but we're not bothered about the people of the town. You know, it's more important that we have this weapon that could preserve the lives of millions of Americans than worry too much about preserving the lives of a couple of thousand people in this town.
But isn't Return of the Living Dead that they open the wrong canister, or they open the canister in the first place, and then at the end the government are just like,
drop a bomb.
Bomb the whole town. It's like, fucking kill them all. There's one bit, I know we're going off on one, but we're talking about, well, actually it's all relevant, because there's one bit in Return of the Living Dead, which is that fucking weird melty skeleton monster thing, which always sticks with me. Which reminds me generally of how these guys melt, which also reminds me of the guy who is in the blob, who is in RoboCop, you know, the sheriff's deputy or whatever, who gets bent backwards in half and pulled out the door in a really great sequence.
That's him.
He's the melty
man. I didn't twig.
In RoboCop.
I didn't twig that.
Yeah.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
Of course he is.
So there's a connection of melty people right there.
That stayed with me, like, I watched RoboCop as a kid, and that stuck in my head, that image of him just, that car going through him like a hot knife through butter.
Yeah, exactly.
Splat. But, I quite liked this subplot. I thought, like I said, you know, this is a more cynical age that's been through, you know, been through Watergate. You know, it's been through JFK being assassinated.
Mm.
You know, we don't trust the government anymore. And it seemed like a fairly actually realistic and viable explanation for where the blob could have come from, that it's just a weapons test.
Yeah, it's like a thing of like, what's scarier? Like the thing you know or the thing you don't know?
Yeah.
And I guess in that respect, it's usually the thing you don't know, but it's in the sense of like, you know, when it's like there's a horror element and it's like, oh, it's supernatural, or is it just some really fucked up individual? And sometimes the scarier thing is it's a fucked up individual.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's like, oh, it's just come from space, so there could be anything out there, to like, no, we did this. But I think coming from a writer's perspective, I felt that the government conspiracy thing, when you see them turn up, and bear in mind, I think they play it so that you think it's like a UFO or something to begin with, where the light's coming up or whatever.
Yeah.
You automatically feel like you're in safe hands. So in fact, you're a bit like Meg in this route. You're like, oh, the government's here, they're going to clear it up. So yeah. There's like a safety net element with it. And again, that gets pulled out from under you because you realize they're the bad guys. And they're active bad guys. They're not just like, we're trying to cover it up. It's like, we're actually quite prepared to kill all of you and shoot you and do whatever. Like, it's a big thing.
Yeah, they escalate, don't they?
Yeah, they're just like...
To the point where I think when they trap them down in the sewer and just leave them to die, I think that's the moment where it's like, whoa, now they've really stepped over the line.
Yeah.
They are proper villains.
Yeah, and drive over the fucking sewer.
Over the manhole. I thought it was all quite X-Files-y.
It is, yeah. It does feel like that. But I like the fact they put that twist on it, and it's... You know, it makes it less hokey, less like it came from outer space, but like an experiment gone wrong makes it feel a bit more tangible, even though it's ridiculous, obviously, as a concept in the first place. But yeah, for me, I was just like, in terms of the story, I like the fact that it's like, oh, the government are here. And he's like, we don't know who these people are. Like, they could fuck us up. And then you realize that they're actually just bringing another problem to the table rather than a solution, which kind of makes the threat even, because now you're dealing with a human threat. Same as what we talked about in a lot of the games it's about, but it's in like the humans are sometimes more dangerous than the, you know, creatures or whatever. So I think I think people are getting hung up on the fact of like, it was a conspiracy, we made it ourselves. And it's like, it's not really about that. It's more the fact that we've now got an added dangerous element here that we once thought was safe. So it's once again turning, I mean, it depends, like a lot of these things, like a lot of the government stuff, it's like they're not necessarily on the side of the good or whatever. If you think of E.T. I don't know or something.
I was getting strong E.T. vibes at this point.
But it was good, and that kind of what I really liked as well, and he does this so well, it's really great casting, is that the like black leader guy, he's all like very friendly and, you know, feels very like warm almost. And you realize very quickly, he's actually like a cold blooded fucking killer, like a real nasty bastard. And so again, it's subverting expectations. And that's why I liked it. That's what I liked about the whole film. It was great. It was just like, I kept expecting it to be like the original or something of that ilk, or just a standard, like, here we go, going through, plodding through the same motions. And each time it surprised me, even towards the end, I was like, I'm still getting surprised.
Which is a great thing to be able to say about a film, especially when it's 90 minutes long.
Yeah, exactly.
Any other final thoughts on the movie?
I guess like, for me, I wonder like, what is the blob? Not in a sense of like, yeah, what is it, but like trying to think of it with like a film theory hat on. And I wondered if it was like, I don't know, I had some thoughts, but like America, like being this like all-consuming blob basically. And I thought the fact that these little towns, especially one that's reliant on like snow and all this, are just getting fucked over by general consumerism and like mass population, you know what I mean? I can't think of another word than consumerism. The fact that it's like the town's dying, and part of the reasoning for it is the fact that it's the cold that kills the blob. Because it's the cold that kills the blob, but it also saves the town, which is like the snow saving the town, because it can start getting people back. If that makes sense. There's something in there, basically. And I probably haven't got my finger on it properly, but...
Like a small town versus global consumerism, global market.
Yeah, I think specifically...
But basically, yeah, that's the threat, and they're able to thwart it by banding together as a community.
Yeah. And, you know, the one thing that keeps the town alive is the cold, the snow, or whatever, that brings in the people and the economy. Mm. And that's what defeated the blob. But yeah, that was my only thought about it. There's probably some other theories out there, but that was just kind of when I was watching it.
I was interesting.
Like, okay. And that's why it kind of starts. I was like, that might be part of the reason, I think I said earlier, about why it starts with like the empty streets and all this stuff. Like, this is the result of like 80s excess, yeah, or whatever.
Because it feels like shots that you see in like old news documentaries about those kind of like, you know, places like Detroit, working towns where the industry has died.
Yeah.
Because everyone's been moved out. Everyone's gone to New York, or their trade has failed.
Yeah.
Because people are buying stuff from China.
China.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I can see that, actually.
Mm. But, yeah, that was my interesting take. Thought about the blob, if I was taking it from a serious angle. What about you?
I don't really have any further thoughts. I think I've said everything. I think it's a great film.
Mm.
And I think, like you said at the top of the episode, if you just want to see basically a B-movie,
mm,
you know, an unabashed B-movie that's done very well, you want to get a bucket of popcorn and just have a good time, switch off. This is like really high grade, I think, drive-in kind of stuff. Really good fun. And yeah, I just don't know why it's not more widely known.
Yeah, well, let's get it there. Yeah, people should go and watch it. Did you ever see The Mist? Frank Darabont's The Mist.
I've seen The Mist. I presume it's that version. Was it made like in the mid-2000s?
Yeah, Thomas Jane.
Yeah, I've got that actually on DVD.
Yeah, so that's, I really enjoyed that when that came out.
I liked it as well.
And I recently, I was thinking, oh, I want to see the black and white version.
Oh, let's do it.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be, basically a lot of the CG is a bit shit and cheap.
Yeah.
And it kind of gets covered by black and white. I want to say that's how he initially wanted it to be, Frank Darabont. So yeah, I'd be interested in doing that. But it's the same kind of, like, he's just really good at like characters and story, and that's basically, you know, that's,
yeah, because The Mist, so it's the same thing with it. It's actually that the monsters or the threat are secondary to an exploration and study of the characters that are put under pressure.
Exactly, yeah, and especially with The Mist, because you're all stuck in this one room, and the fact that different things break out, and there's some great casting in that as well. But yeah, anyway, not to go on about that. Oh, the blob.
Well, let's add it. So let's do The Black and White Mist at some point.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that.
Let's see what other people said on the internet in our reviews.
Internet, sure.
I hate it.
A lot of positive reviews, but I think, you know, we've said a lot of good things about this film. So
yes, here's some,
let's focus
stuff
on the bottom end, the bottom of the barrel. I've got one here, 2 stars out of 10 from IMDb. Disappointing and mean. The plot keeps you interested throughout. Too much of the action takes place either on the mountains or in the sewers. The killings by
mountains,
the blob, get to be,
what
do you boring.
Mean the mountains? It's a forest or a park. Yeah. Not the fucking mountains.
It's like the, I know. Up in the Himalayas.
What are you talking about?
I particularly disliked this time around that some very good people get killed. People I thought would be around trying to nail the blob.
Oh, it's almost as if, you know, they're trying to do something a bit different.
Yeah. Also, just want to point out, you can't nail the blob. The nail will just pass through his
gelatinous being. It's not an effective approach to destroying the blob. If anyone's listening to this podcast in the future because the Earth has been invaded by a blob,
well,
and maybe you've been looking
future.
For solutions to tackling it,
yeah,
then that's my only bit of practical advice. Don't try and nail it. Freeze it.
Freeze it. Or burn it. But apparently burning it doesn't do any good. Might make it worse. Might expand.
Might just antagonize it.
Might blow into little bits and then they become little blobs and they grow.
No.
You want to contract it. That's right. You want to freeze it. You want to get the particles closer together, not further apart.
That's the science.
Less kinetic energy.
The last killing was particularly unnecessary and annoying.
What's the last killing? Which one was the last one?
I can't remember. I really can't remember.
Probably one of the guys in the hazmat suit, surely.
Maybe a child. Oh, I don't know. Guess the producers had a very mean streak in them with all these killings of good people.
Good people.
Still, like the ending, though.
Well, worked out well for her in the end.
I've got one 3 stars out of 10. The blob is out of place in 1988. Mm. I was trying to watch the movie as though it was still 1988, my childhood years, but I didn't like it. The blob was just so corny.
I'm picturing, he's sitting there like in his Thundercats pajamas, yeah. Just trying to recreate the experience of the 80s. Is that what he's doing?
I hope so. That would be fun. Maybe I might do that myself.
Yeah.
Get my like A-team lunchbox out.
Teddy Ruxpin. Dust him off.
I think the only thing cornier would be The Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. That is a terrible film. I mean, who thought a gelatinous mass of red goo would be a credible monster? When I think of a good horror movie, I think, will thoughts of this monster keep me awake at night? And after having thought that, the answer was a resounding no. I love the idea that this guy's criteria for a good horror film is, will it keep me awake at night?
He's gone to the wrong kind of thing. You want a disturbing movie. You want something that stays with you in that case. This isn't going to disturb you.
Yeah, watch something genuinely disturbing like The Sixth Sense.
Disturbing for other reasons. That's if you. It's only disturbing when you watch that film and then you see Haley Joel Osment as he is now. That'll disturb you. He's in the new X-Files. Did we talk about that?
Is he?
Yeah, he's in one of the episodes. He's when Skinner goes back to check on his Vietnam mate, who is also played by Haley Joel Osment, and he plays him and the guy's.
I remember now.
Yeah, and he's just so
cold,
like thick. Real chunky guy now. terrible actor, but yeah. Did when I was a kid.
The blob wouldn't even make a cameo appearance in my mildly unpleasant dreams. I'm just not frightened by the idea of my cherry jello eating me or dissolving me. Apparently this was a remake of a 1958 film with the same title.
Apparently. It could be false.
could have just checked. You're on IMDb.
Yeah,
you could just quickly check. Maybe, this is great, this theory. Maybe in 1958, there was a story going around of a kid whose chewed up bubblegum came alive and ate him. So the movie had some type of credibility.
Credibility? That's what he's looking for. He's coming to the blob going, I need some credible stuff here.
So yeah, in 1988, after having seen Halloween, Exorcist, Poltergeist, the blob just doesn't belong.
Yeah. Weird.
He's been desensitized. My favourite review here. 4 stars out of 10.
Mm.
What the hell is with Kevin Dillon's hair? Really, what is with that hair? I think this movie must have been made during that brief period where white people tried to have afros. His head looks like a mop. It looks so weird. His hair could be the blob. Other than that, this movie had some really awesome death scenes, mostly of people getting broken in two by the blob.
It's not excellent horror movie. Once, but yeah.
Yeah, generally they don't get broken in two. They just sort of like dissolved and assimilated, right?
That's what mostly happens, yes.
An excellent horror movie for late night watching. I just can't get over that dude's hair. Riding around on the motorcycle, all cool. Wouldn't anyone tell him how ridiculous he looked? I don't get it. Wouldn't you just go into hiding after doing this movie looking like that? Or that was probably intentional. Just makes the movie more entertaining, I guess.
I mean, he's got fucking the Tears for Fears haircut, really.
I wish I could respond to that. I wish you can't reply to people's reviews on IMDb, but I actually feel like this person would be a lot of fun to watch a film with.
I mean, it wasn't that distracting, I didn't find. I just like saw it and was like, ooh, that's bold. And then I just kind of got used to it.
I couldn't get over it either, because I was like, that isn't an 80s bad boy mullet. You know, that's not... Think about like Kiefer Sutherland in Lost Boys.
Yeah.
That is a bad boy 80s mullet.
Yeah.
This looked like I'm the keyboard player in a like North London rock. mid-70s prog band.
Yeah, exactly. okay. I can see that.
Anyhow, those are the reviews. Now I would like us to be ushered into Nerd's Corner.
Oh, okay. Let's go.
So Nerd Corner, I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that I kind of like came upon this movie because I was listening to the music by a chap called Michael Honing. So this came out on CD and cassette in 1988. And yeah, I think it's a really good soundtrack. To my ears, it's pretty sort of like Carpentry.
Right.
Not the Carpenters. I mean, John Carpenter. It's kind of a bit of like modern classical with electronic-y ambient darkness.
Okay. I don't remember anything about the music. So if I don't know, maybe I have to go give it a listen then if it's good. If it impresses you enough to watch the film.
Yeah, but I mean, that's probably a good thing that it in the film it's not overly noticeable. It's just there doing its thing. But I think, yeah, when you listen to it, I quite enjoyed it. Okay. I enjoyed the sound anyway, yeah. But anyway, it came out in 88. And then it got a CD reissue in 2011 with a really ugly cover. But then 2018, it made its first appearance on vinyl. On One Way Static Records, and they put out loads of different pressings here.
Mm-hmm.
And they did like really limited. So I think the most common one, there's only 400 copies.
Right.
Which they gave to Light in the Attic, Mondo and Transmission for distribution.
Mm-hmm.
They did one 200 copies only for Zavvi in the UK.
Yeah.
A few others, but yeah, these are really cool. And I think as well, you know, they've had fun with the color schemes here. You know, because it's the Blob, you've got a lot of pink and purple stuff.
Nice.
Yeah,
if it wasn't going to have pink, and purple, I suppose. But yeah, you think they're missing a trick there if it wasn't bright pink fucking vinyl.
There's a cool one here. Purple translucent with pink opaque splatter.
Okay.
Looks horrible.
Right.
In a good way.
Right.
The Zavvi one's a bit boring. It's just block purple. The best one, pink purple swirl. It really looks very blobby.
Okay.
But yeah, I think probably it's on Spotify if you want to listen to that music. Like I said, if you like John Carpenter, that kind of thing, some like 80s synthesizers, then yeah, go and check it out.
Hmm. Yeah. I literally don't remember anything about it. But yeah, if it sounds a bit John Carpenter-ish, then great. All for that.
There's another music connection.
Mm.
So I know you said, oh, you're aware of some other Blob sequels. I think there's only one.
Aye.
1972, Beware the Blob.
Yeah.
Which...
That sounds familiar. Is there also TV movies on the Blob? Maybe not then.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. Maybe you watched Beware the Blob on TV and that's confused you.
It's highly possible.
It was also known as Son of Blob.
Right.
And I can't believe, sorry, going back to Mr. Blobby.
Yeah.
I can't believe didn't do some kind of blob parody on Noel Edmonds' house party.
What?
I mean, it's just asking to be done, surely.
Where they had the slime.
Mr. Blobby going around just like absorbing people into his being, like some kind of vile pink blancmange like vampire.
God, he's such a weird looking. I remember even at the time it was like, this is weird. What a weird thing to do. And it really did take off, didn't it? In the UK.
Yeah, I think if children that were slightly younger than us probably didn't question it and just liked it. But I was of that age where I was like, this feels creepy.
Yeah, what is this?
And he's quite scary. And the problem is that he is unrelenting.
Mm.
He's unrelenting.
But it's just pure slapstick. So for people who don't know, I can't believe we're talking about Mr. Blobby again. It's just a weird, like, Google him, you see what he looks like. And he literally just goes around going, Blobby, Blobby, Blobby. But it's all like, he's an idiot. Like, he's making a mess everywhere. He's doing X, Y, Z. It's all like falling over in this massive foam suit. It's just pure.
But he attacks people.
That's right.
Attacks people. And people go, that's a bit too much. You know, he's got his big, like, rubber latex hand on someone's, like, face. And they're like, all right, pack it in, Blobby. But no, he'll always go that step further.
You're not trying to hug you and pull you to the floor or whatever. I can't remember.
Yeah. Consent is no issue for Mr. Blobby.
Oh my God.
He just takes what he wants. Anyway, look, Beware the Blob, aka Son of Blob.
Beware the Blob.
Was made in,
as well.
Made in 1972. It's the only film, I think, directed by Larry Hagman of Dallas fame. And he stars in it as well. Apparently, it is bloody awful. But the reason I bring it up is because the soundtrack was by The Blobs. The Blobs, which was an alias for our old friend.
Oh God, here we go. Hey.
Any guesses?
Walt Garson.
Of course.
Fucking hell. Jesus. How could I have got that? Who would have thought?
And the full soundtrack wasn't released, but there was a 7-inch single with two tracks. And I think bits of it have been compiled recently on some of the releases, anthologies for Mort Garson. So yeah, nice little bit of trivia there for you.
Yeah, it's interesting. Blob Garson, someone I never heard of before this, before we started this podcast. Cool. Good film. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, go out and see it, everyone. Mm. Track it down.
Yeah. I guess that's
it. What are we going to do next week?
Next week is music. So I think we're doing Are We Nubbin? We Are Devo.
Devo, indeed. Indeed. And we are going way back to the pre-record contract days to look at some hardcore Devo.
Oh. Yeah.
So if you're a fan of the band... I think that's going to be fun, kind of digging into some stuff that's not really been explored and discussed as much as, like, the, you know, their first album, More Freedom of Choice.
Mm.
But yeah, if you're just an interested person in, like, post-punk, weird esoteric music, it's some of the weirdest music that I've ever heard. You know, their first album really is a big step away from that. This is really unusual stuff. So prime Oddcast material.
Right. I love Devo, so yeah, I'm looking forward to giving it a listen.
Cool. Well,
yes, that's it.
I hope you all come back next week for more Oddcast.
Yes.
Until then, thanks for listening.
Goodbye. Thank you for listening to Oddcast Movies, Music and Gaming. If you want to get in touch with us or get a movie, album or game put on our list to discuss, then email us at oddcastoddballs@gmail.com or anewwinterpodcast@gmail.com. This is part of a New Winter Podcast Network, so head on over to anewwinter.net to check out our other shows. You can also follow us on Instagram at anewwinter, Twitter at anewwinter, and you can head on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/anewwinter. Thanks for listening and see you again soon. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.